You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. Coming up, you never know what you'll hear when you really listen. A KM Book Club interview with writer Siri Hustvedt. But first, what does the coffee you bought at Starbucks or Caribou this morning have to do with who arrives on our southern border? The Washington Post reporting says coffee prices have bottomed out and many Guatemalans are losing their economic lifelines because of it. Janir Hernandez, who runs a coffee cooperative in Guatemala, told the Post the migration problem is a coffee problem. We're turning to Dean Sycon. He's the owner of Dean's Beans Organic Coffee Company and the author of Java Trekker. And he joins us today from Orange, Massachusetts. And Dean, welcome to the show. It's good to talk to you this morning.
Thanks, Carrie. Great to be on.
I have been reading that Brazil is producing a lot of coffee beans for the market. Is that one of the reasons why coffee prices have dropped so low?
No, not really. You know, supply and demand used to be a major factor in coffee pricing, but since the turn of the millennium, coffee prices have been determined more by bank speculators, hedge funds, investment firms, looking to profit off the pennies of a swing that the market does. So coffee prices aren't really related to either supply and demand or to the cost of production for coffee farmers.
I'm interested in what you said about investors and hedge funds. So how are they influencing the price of coffee?
Coffee prices are not determined between the farmer and the buyer, generally, except in fair trade and sometimes in what is called direct trade. Coffee prices are determined on a stock market in New York called the New York Board of Trade.
Uh-huh.
And just like in the stock market, the price of the futures of coffee are raised and lowered depending on the information that the investors get from their scientists, from their media people. And those investors, primarily these days, are investment banks, hedge funds, other large institutional investors.
So give me the chronology of the price of coffee. I mean, when did the price, again, influenced by what you've just said, when did it really start to drop?
Well, back in the 90s, the United States was part of a thing called the International Coffee Organization, which was a buyers and sellers international group, and it set a band that coffee prices would sort of bounce around between. It was a band that was reasonable for buyers to receive the money and sellers to spend the money. We got out of it in the 90s under deregulation, and since that time, the prices ping-ponged up and down dramatically, and as I say, largely unrelated to what it cost a farmer to grow and process the coffee and maybe have a little something extra for his family. That really became a crisis around the millennium.
Okay.
At that point, the coffee price plummeted to about 65 cents a pound, which at the time was even below the cost of production, meaning that every time a person bought a pound of coffee or bought a cup at Starbucks, Caribou, or anywhere else that wasn't fair trade, they were actually driving the farmers further and further into poverty. At that time, we saw the largest surge of attempted migration in our history. Here we are 20 years later with the exact same constellation of dynamics. The coffee price today is 97 cents. It's been as low as 80 cents in the last few months.
Mm-hmm.
But it actually has lost 70% of its value since it peaked around $3 in 2014. So farmers today are receiving 70% less than they did 5 years ago. Now, you'll notice None of the large coffee chains have dropped their price.
Yes,
right?
I was actually going to ask you about that.
Well, that's unfortunate because the market rewards those companies for profitability. So when a company, and I don't have to name them, but when a company all of a sudden is twice as profitable because its cost of raw materials dropped 50%, oddly, the market rewards them for being profitable, efficient companies. when it has nothing to do with that. It's about the fact that they're starving the farmers off the land by paying such low prices, and that's what's happening now.
You've used the label fair trade a couple of times, and I think most of us are familiar with the label. I'm not sure we understand what it really means. So when we see that on a coffee production product, what is it really telling us about how it got to market?
Okay, the short story on fair trade is it's a relationship between buyers and sellers. The sellers agree to form democratic cooperatives of small farmers who don't have direct access to the markets or to credit or other things like education. And on our side, we promise that when we buy from those cooperatives who are fair trade certified, we will pay a minimum price in the worst of times and plus 5 cents over the market price in good times.
Okay.
So right now, the minimum price for conventional coffee, that's coffee that's used pesticides, is $1.41. Remember I said that the market price today is 97
yeah.
cents.
Uh-huh.
The fair trade organic minimum is $1.91. Now, that's a minimum price. There are a lot of us fair traders out there who pay well above that price. So even though the minimum price is way better for the farmers than not having it, it's better when companies actually step up to the plate. And you've got a bunch of good companies right out there in Minnesota and Minneapolis and Minnesota who are good fair traders and pay decent prices for the coffee.
So it sounds like you're saying that and you didn't name names, but we know the large coffee companies, Starbucks and others. You're saying that because they're participating outside of this fair trade ecosystem, they are participating in driving the price of coffee down, and that is having this effect, which we're going to get to in just a second, on migration. But this is what is happening outside of the fair trade agreements.
That's true, but you know, you don't have to be a fair trader to pay fairly. You know, this whole thing with the coffee price, the international coffee price, that's not a law. That's just sort of guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's an agreement that people generally use in the industry. But we don't use it, and a lot of fair traders don't use it. We just simply deal directly with the co-ops, and we make our deal and give them what they need and what we can afford. And I'll give you some examples, and I know other people are paying similarly. We're paying about $2.95 a pound right now for most of our coffees, even though the fair trade minimum is $1.91. And if we can make a living at $2.95, we know Starbucks, Caribou, and all those other companies can. They choose not to.
Where do you buy most of your beans from, Dean?
We source directly in 13 countries in Asia, Africa, and Latin America. So it's pretty widely spread.
And is Guatemala part of the
Absolutely.
Yeah. You're buying beans from Guatemala.
We've been working directly with farmers in Guatemala for 25 years, largely with the same farms, too.
Dean Sikon is with us this morning. He's the owner of Dean's Beans Organic Coffee Company and the author of Java Trekker Dispatches from the World of Fair Trade Coffee. We called to ask him about a series that we're following in the Washington Post that connects migration with out of Central America in places like Honduras and Guatemala, migration to the southern border of the United States with economic conditions, including what is happening with the worldwide price of coffee. And so he's giving us some insight on how the price is set on coffee, what some of these fair trade agreements mean. And now I want to talk about, oh, by the way, I should say, if you have a question for Dean about this fair trade, coffee, price setting, migration, 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter at CarrieMPR. So, Dean, earlier in the introduction, I quoted this coffee cooperative source who said the migration problem is a coffee problem. I was reading in the Washington Post article about farmers in Guatemala who have put life savings and everything they have into coffee farms, and they're walking away from them. Are you finding that with the farmers that you're dealing with in places in Central America? They just can't make a living, so they're leaving the farms.
Yeah, it's less an issue for cooperatives because cooperatives create safety nets for their members that they fund with fair trade premiums, for example. But for individual coffee farms and also from migratory coffee farm workers, which make up a lot of the labor on coffee farms, it is absolutely a crisis. Farmers have lost their land, they've lost their jobs, largely in Huehuetenango, an area of Guatemala that produces excellent coffee. And a lot of those people, in fact, what I've read is the largest single group of people slamming up against that southern border are farmers from Huehuetenango that can't make it anymore, largely because of the coffee price.
So these are farmers who were in cooperatives or were not in cooperatives and were doing all right as long as the price of coffee, you know, stayed fairly elevated.
No, largely the ones that aren't in cooperatives. The ones in cooperatives
are surviving.
But not all cooperatives participate in fair trade, right? So without the fair trade premium and without the extra money from higher prices, whether you're a cooperative or a large farm, you're still hurting. But it's largely it's the smaller farms that really take it on the chin, because the larger farms do have access to credit and government programs. But medium-sized family farms, small-scale farms, they're really hurting right now.
I'm aware that President Trump is cutting off foreign aid to some of these Central American countries. Is there anything their governments can do to help some of these farmers who are failing?
You know, there's two answers to that. One, having worked in those countries for well over 30 years as an activist and then a coffee guy, I can tell you that most of those countries spare little amount of money for their rural populations. You know, it's not that much different here, right? That's not where government money goes. So the rural populations of coffee farmers tend to be made up of indigenous peoples who are marginalized in their own countries. So they're not getting too much help from the government. Second, those governments don't have the resources anyway to support, you know, poor people in the rural zones.
Right.
So the money that's getting cut probably wasn't money that was reaching them anyway.
Quick call for you from Darren in Minneapolis. Hey, Darren, what do you want to know?
Hi. This is for Dean. So thanks for educating me on the cost to you of coffee. I'm wondering if there's a way to find out what competitive retailers, i.e. Caribou, Starbucks, and the like, are paying for their coffee so that we can do some educated consuming.
Okay, good question. Dean, I have a couple of minutes left.
Sure, thanks. Great question. You can ask. Obviously, by law, they're not required to tell you, but companies that talk about, and Starbucks is one, about ethical sourcing and all that kind of stuff, they should be willing to tell you what they pay. And if they're not, then the famous question, what have you got to hide? If you're proud of what you're paying the farmers, what have you got to hide? But here's the real conundrum in all this. When companies like Caribou, Starbucks, Gloria Jean's, any of them, when they face the consumer, they're talking about their coffee as if it's a specialty product,
mm-hmm.
and they charge you specialty prices. Right now, you can pay $30 a pound on Counterculture Intelligentsia website if you want to.
Jeez.
Then when those same companies look at the farmers, they're paying commodity prices, not specialty prices. So you can't have it both ways. Either it's a commodity, and that commodity low price should be passed to the consumer, or it's a specialty product, and the specialty price you're charging should reflect the price you're paying the farmers. And that's where the mismatch is in coffee right now.
I mean, Dean,
and I think it's great if consumers ask.
I was just going to say, I mean, what I hear in this is use the power of your consumer dollar. If this is something, and perhaps it should be something that really matters, you've got power as a consumer.
Absolutely, because if people are concerned about migration problems, instead of building walls, pay more money for the coffee. Then people will happily stay at home. Believe me, I talk to a lot of farmers. Their sons and daughters don't want to leave the family just to come up here and send money back. They want to stay home. They want to have a life. But in this climate for the last 5 years, they haven't been able to.
Dean, this has been super valuable and educational, as our caller said. Thank you much.
My pleasure.
You just heard a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to the discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet us at @CarrieNPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all our shows by subscribing to this podcast. You can send us your questions or comments by emailing talk@npr.org.